Since it began in 1995, 59 people have been inducted into the Iowa African American Hall of Fame. The latest three became part of the prestigious group earlier this month. It's Talk of Iowa. I'm Dennis Reese for Charity Nebbe. In a ceremony at the Meadows Event Center in Altoona, the Iowa African American Hall of Fame welcomed three new members who are recognized as enhancing the quality of life for all Iowans. All three have lived in Iowa for decades. This hour we'll speak with each one, including Jane Burleson, Fort Dodge, William B. Hood Jr., Cedar Rapids, and Betty Jean Ferguson, who now lives in Cedar Rapids but spent most of her life in Waterloo. But first, news from NPR and IPR. It's Talk of Iowa. I'm Dennis Reese for Charity Nebbe. This hour, a conversation with the three 2013 inductees into the Iowa African American Hall of Fame. All three are longtime residents of the state. We begin with William B. Hood Jr. of Cedar Rapids. He's had a busy and vibrant life and is a retired professor and vice president for student affairs at Mount Mercy University. Mr. Hood, welcome to Talk of Iowa. Really, really great to talk to you today.
Well, thank you for having me.
And congratulations on your induction into the 2013 Iowa African American Hall of Fame.
Thank you very much. I've been blessed.
Lifelong Iowan by chance?
Well, almost. I was born in Moline.
It's close enough.
When I was 4 years old.
Okay, so you were born in Moline. And you've been in Iowa since you were four.
Well, except for a service, and then I've had jobs that took me to Wisconsin and Indiana. Other than that, I've been here. And in the Marine Corps, I was in California.
And where were you at age four, in what city?
Davenport.
Okay.
Yeah, we moved over here when I was 4 years old.
You've had a career in higher education, so you must have been a good student all through school.
No, I was a hard worker. I was directed in my study, and higher education is just one of my fields. I've had a career in several fields.
You were at Mount Mercy University as vice president for student affairs.
Right.
That was your last job before you retired?
No. I was at Mount Mercy from 1977. I went there as assistant professor of social work. That was promoted to vice president for student affairs and dean of students in 82, and I did that for 10 years. And then I left Mount Mercy in 1992, and I helped found Harambe House, a social service agency for the Jane Boyd Community House in the southeast side of Cedar Rapids. And I did that for 12 years, and then I retired in 2004.
Well, you've lived in Iowa for a long time. Has this been a good place for you to live?
Oh, it's been excellent. It's been excellent, yes. Mm-hmm.
And you've been treated well, even
yes,
going back into your younger life?
Well, you have to realize that I was born in 1933. It was during the Depression. Everyone was poor in those days. And then Davenport was very prejudiced towards Negroes in those days. I could do anything at school except social. Couldn't go to my prom or anything like that. We couldn't eat in any restaurants in Davenport when I grew up. So we had to overcome things like that, you know. But the opportunity has been there, and I've had a number of people that have helped me along the way.
So you would have graduated from high school in, what, 1951?
1951, mm-hmm.
Yeah. And even at that time, there were restaurants in Davenport, Iowa, that would not allow you in. Is that right?
None of them.
None of them.
Blacks couldn't eat in restaurants when I grew up, right.
It seems late that things wouldn't have changed by the early 50s.
There was one restaurant in Davenport, it was called the Famous Shop, and we could go in there and get a hot dog and carry it out. That was it.
So what did they tell you? I mean, what was it like? You would walk in and they would just say, sorry?
We don't serve Negroes. They're right up front with it. It's the same thing that when I first graduated from my undergraduate college, superintendents came in and interviewed me and said, Bill, your credentials are excellent, but our community is not ready for a Negro. See, in those days, there were no Negroes in secondary education. It was that way in many areas in Iowa.
So you attempted to get into what college then?
I went to Iowa State Teachers College. That's where I graduated from my undergraduate work. I have a degree in social science and a minor in physical education and certification to teach and coach.
Okay, that, of course, would be the University of Northern Iowa.
University of Northern Iowa today, yes.
You didn't have any trouble getting into UNI at that time, though, right?
No. It was not getting into the colleges. It was getting a position in the communities.
Mm.
That was the problem.
I mean, getting a job, in other words.
Right.
So you went on to get a BA from UNI. Then what?
Then when I couldn't get a teaching position, my mother had always taught me that when one door is shut for you, another one opens. So a friend of mine was working out at the State Hospital Independence in the children's program, and he suggested I go out there and apply for a job. And I went out there, and they hired me, and I started working in March of 1960, and I stayed until September of 1970, and it opened up a whole new career in mental health for me.
Well, tell me about what you did there for those years.
Okay, when I first went there, I was a half-time recreational therapist and a half-time social studies teacher, and I completed my last 2 years of undergraduate. Then I became a full-time social studies teacher and assistant principal of the school there for the children.
That sounds like that was a good time for you.
It was. And then they insisted that I get more education so I could use my abilities. So I went back to school and got a master's degree in social work at the University of Iowa.
So now you have a master's degree. So you've come a long way.
Oh, yes. Yes, I have.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then where did you go from there?
Well, I stayed there, worked out my 2 years to 1970, and I became the director of the Jane Boyd Community House in Cedar Rapids.
And the Jane Boyd Community House, tell us about what they do.
Well, in those days, we were a major social service agency serving the southeast area of Cedar Rapids, both in social service, sports, and early child development. And I stayed there 2 years. And then I went to Milwaukee, and I started the first mental health clinic for Goodwill in the United States. And I stayed there 2 years, and three of us left there and fulfilled a practitioner's dream. We went to Indiana, the northern part, the five cities between Chicago and Gary, and we started a comprehensive mental health clinic for five cities. And I was director of outpatient services there. And then one afternoon, we lost $600,000 of federal funds. We had multiple funding. And that essentially wiped out the executive staff. So I looked around in the Social Work Journal, and Mount Mercy had a position that fit my qualifications. I applied, and they hired me, and I came back to Iowa in 1977.
Well, Mr. Hood, you've spent a lot of time counseling people, it sounds like, over the years.
Yes, because the 4 years when I went to Mount Mercy, I had a private practice downtown in Cedar Rapids. And my private practice was really made up of young black professionals.
Oh, I see.
Those days, uh-huh. I didn't get paid much because one of their problems was they didn't have much money. So therefore, I didn't get paid much. But I had a full-time job, so it was no problem. And then I did that from 78 to 82. But when I got promoted to Vice President for Student Affairs, it required so many hours, I couldn't do both, so I gave it up. And I just would spot counsel people, you know.
Is Iowa a good place for African Americans to live?
I think it is, if you're qualified to do something, sure.
You're not running into the overt racism that you ran into in the early 50s, certainly, are you?
No. But there's another element here. I am a specialist in Christian education. And for 31 years, since I've been in Cedar Rapids, I've been director of Christian education at my church, Fellowship Baptist Church. So that's a major part of what I do and still do.
As vice president for student affairs at Mount Mercy University, that's got to be a tough job because students have lots of needs, as especially in their undergraduate years. And I'm sure you dealt with students who were misbehaving and students that were in trouble. But do you like college students and counseling college students?
It was a wonderful position. Yeah, there were students that were having difficulty, adjustment problems. We worked through some of those. But we had some great citizens who went on and did some great things. And my mother taught me, be nice to people. Because in 2010, I had major surgery at Mercy Hospital. Many of the nurses there had been my students back in the 80s at Mount Mercy College. And they gave me excellent care. So it's just nice to be nice to people.
Mount Mercy, I'm sure, graduates a lot of nurses, correct?
Yeah, it was a major nursing school. And that was before they went to university status and had the graduate degrees, you know.
And then, Mr. Hood, you were off to the Jane Boyd Harambee House. Tell me more about that name, Harambee.
I don't know how familiar you are with Cedar Rapids, the geography of it, but the near southeast side, there are a number of poor people living in that area. And our charge was to work with it. We had 6,000 people in our catchment area, of which many of them were black. It was not all the black people lived there, but there were a number of black people and poor white people. And then also in the ring around it, there were many well-to-do white people. And our charge was try to bring people together, give them a sense of community, and really work very closely with the schools into helping the children develop. So we had partnerships with McKinley Middle School and worked very closely with Johnson Elementary School. So we were a social service agency. We had a drug treatment program there. We had an after-school program for youth, which was called Rites of Passage, which was run by Carl Werner, a national recognized program.
Do you feel that the African-American community has more problems and more challenges today due to, for one thing, the increasing number of single parents than the black community was facing maybe some years ago?
Well, you have to look at it holistically. There are more problems and challenges in America today than there were then. People are more mobile from major cities, you know, trying to find a better life. So many of them are coming here, and many of them have come out of very violent situations, you know, and it's been an adjustment problem. But it's like anything else. I just believe that all people want to improve themselves, you know. So I think it's been a challenge for many people, but it's been a challenge for many whites and Asians who are moving in and Hispanics.
And what about your family? Tell us about your family.
Yeah, married to my wife, Gwendolyn Clay, and we've been married 58 years. We have a son, Bill, who lives here, and a daughter, Sheila, who lives in Iowa City.
Well, Mr. Hood, I really enjoyed talking to you. Congratulations on your award.
Thank you.
Hope you have many years ahead of you to keep working in the community on your various projects and have a good life.
Thank you. Thank you. Well, thank you for the interview. I appreciate it.
William B. Hood, Jr. lives in Cedar Rapids. We continue our conversation with the 2013 inductees into the Iowa African American Hall of Fame after a break. This is Talk of Iowa. Talk of Iowa continues. I'm Dennis Reese for Charity Nebbe. This hour, I'm talking to the three 2013 inductees into the Iowa African American Hall of Fame. Jane G. Burleson has lived in Fort Dodge all of her life, and like William B. Hood, Jr., has been extremely active in civic affairs. She is a retired 24-year member of the Fort Dodge City Council. First of all, Jane, congratulations on your induction into the Iowa African American Hall of Fame. I'm sure you were excited to hear about this honor. When did you first hear about it?
Well, I heard about it about this month from Rose Wilburn, from Will Banks from Cedar Rapids at the African Museum.
Were you excited to hear about this?
Yes, I was. Very excited.
What were your first thoughts?
I just never imagined that I would be in this place. I'd been there, but I never imagined about getting an award.
Jane, how long have you lived here in Iowa?
I've lived here all my life.
And how old are you now?
I'm not going to tell you how old I am.
you don't have to.
Ask a woman that.
Okay. I won't press the issue. You served on the Fort Dodge City Council for 24 years. That was a long run.
Yes, it was, yeah. And being the first woman and being black also was really quite an accomplishment. Yes, it was.
What made you decide to run for the city council?
Well, we had a changed form of government, and I was on one of the committees because we used to have just three men as our city officials. And I was kind of against it, but then I changed my mind and helped get it established. And in the meantime, I was working at Hormel's as a packing house.
Mm-hmm.
And I was involved in the union. And then I got on the committee of political. And from then on, I just started just being in political. I got to meet everybody that was running for any office. They came to Iowa, and so I got to see them. It was just amazing.
And you're talking about this was a statewide sort of thing, right?
Oh, yeah, yes. But then when the presidential elections came, that everybody came to Iowa, too.
So who did you get to meet?
Oh, Lord. I got to meet Ted Kennedy, who's deceased, and Chuck Grassley, and Latham, and I met Dole, and, oh, I just met just various people.
What did you tell them? Did you tell them about Iowa and some of the issues we have here?
Oh, yeah, we sure did, and they spoke at different places. A lot of the clubs had them speaking, and once in a while, you get a chance to, you know, everybody doesn't get to ask the question, but I was fortunate enough I got to ask some questions. And then also, you know, when I was on the council, we went to Washington, D.C. So we have lunch with Tom Harkin and breakfast with Congressman Grassley and Latham. And I got to ask questions, and Latham always called me a troublemaker because I just asked questions.
What sorts of questions?
Well, I told him I had been looking up his record of voting, and I said, I don't appreciate some of your votes. And naturally, I'm a Democrat, and he's a Republican. But I said, are you for the people or not for the people? It was very interesting, very interesting.
What sorts of issues are important to you?
Well, right now, since I'm a senior citizen and our Social Security, because, you know, they keep talking about there isn't any money. There's money for Social Security. And like I said to Congressman Grassley, well, you need to pay that money back to Social Security that the Congress borrowed, and they haven't paid it back yet.
Mm. Yeah.
Yeah, so, you know, it's just, and I think that we should be recognized much more than we are.
Any issues related to the African American community, both in Iowa and in the U.S. as a whole?
Yes, I think that there should be more attention being made to Afro Americans, and especially the young black men, because all young black men aren't always out selling drugs and et cetera. We have a lot of well-educated young black men that are striving to better themselves, and it just upsets me about, what's his name, the boy?
Trayvon Martin.
Trayvon, yes. Because, you know, we had the neighborhood watch here in Fort Dodge also.
Mm.
And I was on that, help with that with in my neighborhood. And nobody carried a gun. You know, they say that when you go, people that carry a gun are looking for trouble sometimes. Maybe not, but they said they have to have a gun to protect themselves.
What were your feelings about the verdict, the innocent verdict against for George Zimmerman?
I just didn't think that was right.
Mm-hmm.
I really didn't. And I don't know why it would say to protect himself. He's an adult man with carrying a gun, and that's a 17-year-old kid. Oh, I just don't understand that.
Jane, let's look at your long tenure on the Fort Dodge City Council. This is a very white community, and how many African Americans live in Fort Dodge? Do you have any idea?
Well, I think maybe now we might have maybe 1,200 or so.
Yeah.
We have a lot of new people coming into Fort Dodge.
What was your overall impression of the council for those years? I mean, were you fighting with them a lot? Were you pressing?
Oh, no, I was very, very outspoken, and I was for the people. And some of the guys would say to me when we'd have a break at council meeting, Jane, you ask those questions. Where do you get? I said, I'm a woman, aren't I? That's why I asked him questions. And sometimes the audience that were sitting there observing, they would clap when I'd ask a question. to get an answer because I was there for the people.
Did you get some laws changed over that time?
Oh, yeah. Sometimes, yeah. We got, it's been a while, but I worked hard to get things that some of the people, the residents wanted. You know, they would ask questions, and then they didn't seem to be able to get an answer. And so I did my best in answering, getting questions answered.
Where did you grow up then, Jane? Right there?
In Fort Dodge.
Okay, so you were born in Fort Dodge.
That I grew up in, we called it the Flat Rats.
Uh-huh.
It was a southern part of Fort Dodge. You know, like we had the East Enders and the people that lived in the North. The North Enders were the people, the wealthy people, you know, but that's the way it is in a lot of communities. But I got along fine, went to school, and we never had any racial. Once in a while, there might be a little bit, not an outright like, you know, like the big cities have.
Did you ever experience, Jane, any overt racism living in Fort Dodge in your life?
Just a little bit, not that much. Because the way we were, that if they didn't want us to, you know how they have signs, we reserved the right to refuse service to anyone. And if they didn't want a service, we didn't pay any attention. We just walked out and left. We didn't protest or anything. It was fine. We had a good time anyway.
Well, when you were, let's say, a teenager, that was probably, I don't want to, you know, imply what your age is now, but this would have been probably in the era of World War II.
Yeah.
And, was it different then?
Yes, it was. And it's better now than it was as I was growing up. You see more of us in the stores and in employment and et cetera, you know. Because when I was growing up, a lot of them were just working, like, on the construction and et cetera, which some are still doing. But we see them in the stores now. We see them as clerks, see them in the credit unions and et cetera. And then we have a couple of people that have started a business. The one is that he has a restaurant, and it's quite intermingled. Not only blacks go, whites go, and et cetera. And then we have another one that caters food, et cetera. So we have black businesses that are doing well here. And we used to have a black tailor here, but he got sick and died.
Mm-hmm.
So we don't have one now. But we have a young black man that's at the shopping center, has a store, sells clothes.
Uh-huh.
I'm along, you know. And there's been one black man that ran for, every office on the council, and he ran against me, and he ran for supervisor, but he hasn't made it yet.
Mm-hmm.
But I encourage him. I said, at least he has enough nerve to run. So everybody's up for election this fall, you know, here, the mayor and all the council people.
When you were young, were you ever refused service at a restaurant or anything like that happened to you?
No, yes, one. It was Constantine's, and I used to go to, and they were Greeks. But you know what it was, what was interesting about it, they had black people in there working in the kitchen. But when we went in and they sold candy, and then it was like, it was restaurants serving sandwiches and et cetera. And when we went in and they said, we won't serve you, so we just turned around and walked out. And I, you know, being young then, I didn't think about it. But they had black help in there, but they wouldn't serve black when they went to come to the counter.
What did your parents do?
Oh, my mother, she was a stay-at-home, but then she worked as a... Oh, one black man had a bar, and she worked as a waitress in his bar, and off and on, not full-time. And my dad worked on the railroad.
And you're a 33-year employee of Hormel and Company, and what did you do for Hormel?
Oh, I worked in the sausage department where all the lunch meat is and where the little sizzlers and et cetera. I didn't work, where they make the Spam at. You know, they had Spam at Fort Dodge, and it ran 24 hours a day.
I didn't know they had Spam at Fort Dodge. I thought that was in Austin.
Plant.
Uh-huh.
Oh, yeah. It was wonderful. Because, you know, they sell a lot of that to the army.
Yeah.
And that's what, it was interesting to see how the process of Spam is.
Did you enjoy that career?
Yeah, I liked it down in Hormel. Yes, I think they were a good employer.
They treated you well?
Oh, yes, and our medical was just wonderful.
Mm-hmm.
Our eyes, our teeth, our body, just wonderful. And we still get now medical after I'm retired, and I only pay $1.75 for my medical, my prescriptions.
That's a good deal. I'm talking to Jane Burleson. She is one of the three inductees into the Iowa African American Hall of Fame in the year 2013. She lives in Fort Dodge and has lived there her whole life. Jane, you also worked as a special education teacher's aide.
In school, in high school, yes, at the public school. And, you know, I'd never, well, I've been around kids because I had one child myself, and I had the misfortune of losing. I had a couple miscarriages. But anyway, I wasn't, you know, in the habit of being with kids, and then I didn't know anything about special needs. So anyway, so then different ones said, well, what are you doing? I said, well, I'm working at high school. And I said, you know, I used to work with dead hogs, but now I'm working with live piggies. And I tell you, it was heartwarming.
Uh-huh. Why was that?
With the children.
Yeah. I mean, what was heartwarming about it? What did you like?
I liked about me helping, being able to help them, and how loving they were and how smart some of them are. But they just had a frustration in their lifetime that made them, you know, be put in a special needs class. But I really enjoyed it.
And you helped to launch Fort Dodge's Martin Luther King Committee.
Yes, I did.
When was that?
Oh, that was when I was on the council.
Mm-hmm.
So I can't tell you what year now. But and then we have a street. That's MLK, and it's by the Catholic school on the route and the public school. The street is between the two schools. I thought that would be a good accent for that.
Well, it sounds like, Jane, Fort Dodge has been good to you over the years.
Yes, it has, very much so.
Or you would have left probably a long time ago.
Oh, yeah, you're right. And each mayor that I was there was in tension with, I really had a good time with them. And they were just amazed at how knowledgeable I was. But I just paid attention to my city, and I love being involved. I was on committees, Girl Scout, Boy Scout committees. Oh, I loved it. I really enjoyed it very much.
It really sounds like you really love working with people as much as you can.
Yes, I do. Yes, very much so, I do.
So now it sounds to me like you're still very, very busy. You've been retired for a long time, but what are you doing these days?
Well, I'm on the committee of the Martin Luther King Committee, and I'm on a political committee, Federation of Labor. I'm on that committee. And then what else am I on? I'm just trying to think. Well, that's about it, I think. Church Women United, too. And so I'm, you know, I just help out when I'm asked to help out, and I enjoy it because it keeps your mind active.
Sure.
You know, and I love doing that, yes.
What do you tell young African Americans living in Fort Dodge? What's your advice to them today?
I tell them that don't give up and strive to be the best you can, and don't use the word can't because you can.
Mm-hmm. You encourage them to try to get a college degree?
Oh, yes, very much so, yes. And also, you know, I went to Nigeria, Nigeria 2, 3, 5, 6 years ago.
Uh-huh.
I got to go. I was one of the women that was called Women in Politics. And I got to go to Nigeria, Africa. And I came back and gave different speeches. And I was telling them how the children there just love education.
And, the children in Nigeria? The children in Nigeria love education?
Yes. I went to one school was for the blind, one school was for just regular school, and then I took a lot of I got a lot of little pencils and et cetera and stuff from the Chamber of Commerce and shared it with the kids at school, and it was just it was wonderful to see those kids. I have my picture with a bunch of the kids. Oh, it was wonderful, I tell you. And I was telling the kids how they have this big black pot out in the yard. And then they all get bowls and they dip, and that's their lunch.
Mm-hmm.
I said, you know, here in the United States, you get it your choice. You know, and I said, and just shows you in just different spots of of Africa how it is, but it was just a wonderful trip. We were there for 2 weeks. Oh, it was wonderful.
Have you had a chance to do much traveling?
You know, well, a little bit, yeah. I've been down to Texas and St. Louis, and I went to Oklahoma. We went there to gamble.
Okay.
Because, you know, Texas doesn't have gambling.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm, yeah. Oh, yeah. So I've been having it. And since my niece is here from Milwaukee, they're here for my induction in the Hall of Fame, mm-hmm. and then I'm going to go back to Milwaukee, Wisconsin with her.
I hear a lot of noise in the background. Where are you now?
I'm at home sitting in my apartment.
Oh, okay.
The TV's on. I think they got the TV on, yeah. Oh. Sorry. Oh.
No, that's quite all right.
Yeah.
Jane Burleson, it's been great talking to you, and again, congratulations on being inducted into the Iowa African American Hall of Fame, one of just three inductees in 2013.
Thank you so much for calling me and interviewing me.
Well, I wish you well, and you're going to Milwaukee. Hope you have a safe trip and
Yes. Many
more years ahead of you living and enjoying Fort Dodge.
I hope so, too. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Jane Burleson lives in Fort Dodge. After the break, I'll talk to the third inductee into the Iowa African American Hall of Fame, Betty Jean Ferguson. This is Talk of Iowa. This is Talk of Iowa. I'm Dennis Reese for Charity Nebbe. Along with William B. Hood, Jr. and Jane Burleson, Betty Jean Ferguson was inducted into the Iowa African American Hall of Fame earlier this month in Altoona. Ferguson now lives in Cedar Rapids, but spent most of her life in Waterloo. Her civic activities have been numerous, including serving for 6 years on the Iowa State Board of Regents. Betty Jean Ferguson, first of all, thanks for taking a few minutes to talk to me, and congratulations on your award, 2013 inductee into the Iowa African American Hall of Fame.
Thank you.
Were you surprised when you got that call telling you that you had, were going to be part of the Hall of Fame?
I didn't know anything about it. It's very complicated, but evidently the director of the Mason City Human Rights Commission was the one who nominated me. And what he did is he contacted a friend of mine here in Cedar Rapids to get information, and she really didn't know what to do, so she went to my niece, Lilia Harris, who's a pathologist here in Cedar Rapids. And this has been almost 2 years ago. It's been 2 years ago. And my niece was saying, well, she was doing something for this, the lady who works at the Jane Boyd house here in Cedar Rapids, and she wanted some information, so she started. I gave her a lot of stuff, and I didn't know what it was for. And it wasn't until I heard from the director of the association that she then explained to me what had happened. That she was the one who'd gotten information and had given it to that office of the African American Association, Hall of Fame Association.
But you're living in Cedar Rapids now?
I broke my shoulder, and I had no more family in Waterloo, so my family here moved me to Cedar Rapids. I've been here since May 2010.
Betty Jean, were you born in Iowa?
Mm-hmm, I was born in Waterloo.
And so you've lived in Iowa your entire life?
That's right, except for when I've been away to school, and then there was 2 years I worked in Washington, D.C.
Has Iowa treated you well over the years?
Well, yeah, it's changed, like the rest of the country has. And when you ask, say change, what do you mean, from what point of view? It's you know, some of the things are based upon just changes in how houses are built and cars, not that sort of thing. There's some ways that it has changed in terms of, I think, people's behavior and so on, some that are good and some that, to me, are not so good.
African-Americans in Iowa who are in their 80s now, and I won't ask your age, have told me that when they were young, they couldn't get into most restaurants here.
That's right. They wouldn't service in restaurants.
Was that the case in Waterloo also?
Yes. It was true all over the state as far as I could tell.
How did that make you feel when you would walk into a restaurant and they said, "We just don't serve you. Well, you'll have to leave"? Well, how did you?
The thing is, we didn't walk into restaurants. You knew they wouldn't serve you, so you didn't go there.
But weren't you angry about that overall?
Well, yeah. First of all, I thought the people who did it were kind of stupid.
Okay.
So I took that kind of. I looked at it that way. And I never could understand why they couldn't see that we as human beings had value. And I grew up in a family where my parents were both very involved in NAACP. And so we usually went with them to local meetings as well as when state conference had meetings on a statewide basis. And I went to several national conventions of NAACP. So I knew it wasn't just Iowa. This was all over the country and somewhere places it was worse than Iowa's. But it was something that I was raised. This is something you got to work on and get changed. And that's what my parents were doing and their friends. And so I grew up with that.
Your parents must have been some of the first people to get involved in the NAACP.
No. Mm-mm. No, there was people in Waterloo, the Pages and so on. There were the Des Moines had a very, very strong family. In fact, remembering names, but her husband was an attorney there, and she was born in Baltimore and actually was a friend of the mother of the man who became the first black on the Supreme Court. And so she was always I always consider her sort of Miss NAACP of Iowa. But as far as I know, it started in the early, late 1900s, like 1901.
Oh, okay.
Mm-hmm. And it was, there were people involved in different places.
What did your parents do, Betty Jean?
My father was a doctor.
A doctor in Waterloo?
Mm-hmm.
Was he, would he have been the first African-American doctor in Waterloo?
No, there was one who came there before him, but he only stayed a year, and then he left. He went to Chicago.
What was it like growing up?
After my father died, my mother had gone to IOU for 2 years, and she went a couple of summers. She went and got her degree and teaching certificate at UNI, and then she taught school. She was the first African-American teacher in the Waterloo school system.
Wow. And what about yourself? What was it like growing up in Waterloo, and how did you do in school?
Well, you probably should ask somebody else that question. I always liked school. I thought I was a good student. We were expected be good students. Our parents expected of us. When you have parents who both are college educated, and my mother's mother had been a teacher, I mean, that was the expectation for us to do well in school. And I always knew that at some point I was going to go to college, so that was never a question.
And which high school did you graduate from?
East
High, and then on to college?
Then I went to my first 2 years of college. I went to a Talladega College, which is a historically black college in Alabama.
Mm-hmm.
And my father really wanted, because of we had never had a black teacher, and some of the things that, and we could not be in place, and some of the things that happened in Waterloo schools. He wanted us to have the experience of going to black school. So my oldest sister went there, and she graduated from there. I went there 2 years, and then I transferred to the University of Iowa.
And so you finished at the University of Iowa.
No. What happened is I dropped out of school and went to Washington, D.C., where my sister, who was younger than I am, her husband was in school at Howard University in Washington, and I stayed with them for a couple of years, and then I came back and I finished at UNI, which was Iowa State Teachers College.
Right. Right, Iowa State Teachers College at the time, and then Betty Jean, what did you do? Did you get a teaching job right away?
No, I couldn't get a teaching job. If I had been an elementary school teacher, I probably could have, but they were not ready anywhere in Iowa at that point to hire a black person to teach on secondary level.
Okay.
So I worked for a while for the Recreation Commission and then YWCA, and then I went to Washington D.C. and I worked for the CIA for a few years, and then I came back. I worked there for about 2 years, and then I came back to Waterloo and went to what we call TC, Iowa State Teachers College, in those days, and I finished there.
And what year?
I beg your pardon?
If I could ask, what year was that when you graduated from what is now UNI?
I'm 80-some years old. Calling up dates is very difficult for me. It would have been 1952 or 53, somewhere around there.
Right. So in the early 50s in Waterloo, Iowa, with a BA degree, you were not able, they would not hire a black person to teach in junior high or senior high?
No. Uh-uh.
When did that change?
Well, the first person I know who was black who taught on the secondary level was a girl who was getting her master's while I was getting my bachelor's at UNI, and this town hired her in northeast Iowa, and she taught there for about 2 or 3 years. And then she finally was hired in Des Moines.
So what did you end up doing, Betty Jean, for most of your career in Waterloo?
I worked for the Waterloo Recreation Center, and then I worked at the YW. And that's when I went to Washington, D.C. after that, and I worked for the federal government, worked for CIA, and then I came back and finished my degree. After I got my degree, I was hired for a job with Conestoga Council of Girl Scouts.
Of Girl Scouts, uh-huh.
Mm-hmm. And yeah, I was a district advisor, as they called the term.
Were you married at this time, and did you have a family?
I've never been married.
You've never been married?
Mm-mm.
You were the director for some years of the Waterloo Human Rights Commission. That, I'm sure, was a very challenging job and an interesting job. What sorts of things did you run into? What problems did you run into for those years?
Well, our biggest problems in those days were the business of housing, discrimination in housing, discrimination in employment. Not too much in public accommodations like in restaurants, but there. The passage of the law that the federal government was outlawing discrimination in employment and employment first is eventually affected us. Although it was EEO who did most of the enforcement and investigation of some types of employment, but I think employment was difficult. The most difficult was housing to work with.
Mm-hmm. You went on to serve on some other boards, the legislative higher education.
What you've left out is that there was a point before I became director of the Human Rights Commission.
Mm-hmm.
I went to the University of Kansas, and I got a master's in social work.
And then you were at some point...
That I was hired as director of the Human Rights Commission.
And you were also president of the board of directors of the Waterloo Community Schools.
Just for 1 year, but mm-hmm. I was on the school board for, I think, gosh, it seemed like maybe about 6 years or so. I had while I was on the school board, I was appointed to the Board of Regents. So after that, working and being on the Board of Regents and the local school board became a lot of work. So there was a period I finally did not run for school board again because I was on the Board of Regents.
Is Iowa a good place for African Americans to live in your estimation?
Depends on who you're talking about. I don't know. I get the feeling that a lot of white people in Africa in Iowa are not really used to us, and there's so many towns that are all white and areas that I think, you know, they don't have any personal experience with knowing us, and so it's easy for them to buy into into errors in terms of what we're like as human beings instead of seeing us as human beings.
What are the greatest challenges facing the black community today?
Well, they're almost still pretty much the same. I think for middle-class educated blacks, I don't think there's as much problem in housing as they are, but the thing that really gets me is that lower-income blacks, I don't think get the kind of treatment and support and so on that they should get in the schools. You've got kids that don't see getting an education meaning anything because they have family members who have not had an education, so that they don't see that as a means to getting somewhere. And there are still a lot of areas where discrimination is in employment exists, and probably one of the worst things that for black males is the way that the legal system treats. It's terrible. When you look at the percentage of blacks who live in Iowa and the percentage who end up in jail and in prison, doing some of the same thing that whites do and don't get sent to prison. You know, it's very obvious that's another way of that the system tries to control, I think, black people, especially black males.
Betty Jean Ferguson, it's been a great pleasure talking to you. Really enjoyed hearing about your life, and again, congratulations on being now in the Iowa African American Hall of Fame, 2013 inductee. Again, really appreciate your time, and I wish you the best.
Well, thank you very much.
Betty Jean Ferguson is one of three new inductees into the Iowa African American Hall of Fame. Our congratulations to all three for their years of service and dedication. That's Talk of Iowa for today. Talk of Iowa's executive producer is Catherine Perkins. For Charity Nebbe, I'm Dennis Reese.